From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Right now, hosting a party, crowding down by the lake, playing a pickup basketball game in a public park. If you're doing these things, you are spitting in the face of the doctors and nurses and first responders who are risking everything so that you can survive.
I think it's not wise for us to try to put timelines together. We have models that we are using, predicting at least in the near future how we expect the cases to increase, and it's that important information that we're using to talk with our hospitals to figure out the surge capacity and what's necessary.
We are working with our budget experts, with our Office of Management and Budget, with my deputy governor for budget and economy, and our entire team to try to figure out what direction what's the steepness of the downturn in revenues? And of course, there are expenditures that we're needing to make to save people's lives, to protect people across the state. We're going to do what we need to do. There's no question about that.
That's Governor J.B. Pritzker talking about concerns over the state budgets. We also heard there from the Illinois Department of Public Health Director, Dr. Ngozi Ezike. Those two have been front and center each day for briefings about the state's response to COVID-19. We'll discuss what's happening now and how the economic picture in Illinois is cloudy, to say the least. This is State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel this week, practicing social distancing from his home in Springfield, Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, and also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also linking up with us is the IPR State House editor, Brian Mackey, and with me in studio today, but sitting more than 6 feet apart here, is Sam Dunklaw, IPR reporter. So let's get right to it. And Sam, I'll go to you first. The numbers of COVID-19 cases and deaths continue to rise in the state of Illinois, but there's still a feeling that we really don't know how prevalent this disease is at this point.
Yeah, we surpassed more than 2,500 confirmed cases. Now, the important thing to keep in mind that outlets like ours and others have been trying to hammer home, and that public health experts have been saying, is that, listen, testing is limited. In places like South Korea, for example, testing was widespread. Officials were able to zero in on the hotspots very quickly because millions upon millions of tests were available. The same is not true in the United States. And so when you hear public officials start to say, we have this many confirmed cases in the state of Illinois right now, it is assumed that the number is likely to be much higher because the testing hasn't been available. That it's continued to be a problem. The federal government has been kind of sparring with Governor J.B. Pritzker on providing more tests. This has just been an ongoing thing over the last couple of weeks. And to give you an example of what we're looking at, just here in Sangamon County, the county has only really been able to do a few hundred tests. They provided some data just yesterday that said that a number of people that they've tested, 283 or so came back negative, and they're still waiting on 98. So almost 100 tests are still outstanding, and there are a number of reasons for that. Right here in Sangamon County, and this is reflective of the rest of the state too, I believe, there are tests being sent to public labs, those set up by the Department of Public Health, and there are also those that are being shipped out to third-party testing labs. The amount of turnaround time is different. At the public labs, you're looking at between 1 to 3 days for results, and at private labs, between 4 and 6. So as more tests come online, as more people are able to access these things, as priorities change over the next couple of weeks, we are likely to see the number of confirmed cases increase for that very reason.
So those numbers that we've been hearing each day, like we said, we're not sure. We're pretty sure that the disease is more prevalent than what those numbers are. Brian, should we pay any attention to the daily numbers?
Yeah, I think they're worth paying attention to, because even though they probably, as we said, they likely drastically understate the scope of the infections across Illinois, as those numbers get bigger, hopefully they still can sort of shock people into awareness that they need to continue social distancing themselves and isolating or quarantining, or isolating if you're sick, quarantining if you're not sick. And beyond that, one of the other numbers that we need to pay attention to a lot are deaths. And I saw an interesting argument this week from a infectious disease expert type person on social media, where much of this national conversation is taking place on Twitter, who said that really you want to look at the death rate and the doubling rate of deaths. And if countries can get that below 3 days so that the deaths are not basically doubling every 3 days, then you'll know you are really bending the curve, because there's still so little testing and testing is so limited that you don't really have a good sense of how, you know, if you're really bending the curve of infections and slowing the rate of infections, just because so many people who are likely infected are not getting tested. So those aren't showing up in the official numbers. However, the deaths are a more hard number, because those are the, you know, these are people who are typically in hospitals getting intensive care, critical care, probably on a ventilator, and who still succumb to this illness. At least those are hard numbers, and that's the one you should really keep an eye on.
And Charlie, we've been, you know, getting these numbers each day, and as Brian mentioned, the deaths. I can remember when we had the first death from this several days ago now, and now they just continue to go up. We're expecting some every day, maybe even doubling, as Brian had mentioned. That's a possibility here. This has this feeling right now as though government or the medical community or anyone else really can't stop this thing at this point. This just keeps seeming to, you know, to go forward and grow exponentially.
Yeah, and I think as Brian said, part of it is that we really haven't been able to test as widely as some other nations have in terms of determining things. But for example, on Thursday, the report came out, and the number of confirmed cases in Illinois was 2,538, an increase of 673 from Wednesday. And the deaths were 26, up 7 fatalities from Wednesday's numbers. And I think it's important to keep an eye on these numbers, because as the numbers keep increasing, it indicates that what we are trying to do hasn't yet had an effect. And one of the things that the governor and public health officials point out is that the stay in place or stay at home really isn't going to show results for maybe a couple of weeks, because people with this disease, they can be carriers and not even know they have it, and they can spread it. And one individual can spread it to many, many others, and it's sort of like just a chain reaction. And so I think what we need to look for is, when do these numbers, the increase, the daily increase, start to taper off and not increase at the same rate? And I guess that's what they mean when they say flattening the curve.
Yeah, and I just want to amplify Charlie's point. It's not just that, and that is a huge problem, that especially younger people can be carrying this. Maybe they had a mild cough. I think a lot of people are kind of looking back now and thinking, boy, is that little cough I had earlier this year, did I have COVID-19 and maybe not even know it? But the other issue with this is that it's a disease that once it enters your body, it can still take up to 14 days to manifest itself. That's where you have to know, that's when you know that you're probably have dodged getting an infection, unless you're one of these people who just gets such a very mild thing you don't even really know it. But that's why you wouldn't expect to see these numbers slowing down from the stay in place, stay at home order yet, because that's only been in effect for, we're coming up on 2 weeks of that. But as we've been discussing, still not widespread compliance with that directive yet. Or maybe not widespread enough compliance.
And another difficulty to compound on this, this is something my colleague Mary Hansen reported on this week quite extensively, is that because of the fact that testing is limited, hospitals and healthcare providers are really only testing people who are in immediate priority. So specifically with public labs, they're only testing hospital patients with pneumonia, those in nursing homes, those who have been in group settings where there have been confirmed cases. So if you're not in one of those groups, you're not necessarily on the priority list to get tested. And before, you know, until that becomes more available, that's sort of the situation where we're at.
And Governor Pritzker has made this clear. He doesn't feel as though that the state is prepared with the equipment that is needed, not only just testing kits, but he's talked about items like respirators that they feel the state is definitely going to need. He has sparred publicly with the president over this. I believe they had a call, it sounds like, earlier in the week in which Pritzker said actually it was a pretty cordial conversation, and he believes that the state is getting at least some equipment from the federal government because of what the president had to say. But Charlie, this, like I said, this has been something where the governor J.B. Pritzker has taken a national leadership role almost in going after the president and the federal government here.
Yeah, he's been one of the governors who's been more active and outspoken. He and Governor Cuomo of New York, and part of it, and you can tell listening to our governor J.B. Pritzker, his frustration in not getting the kind of help that he and other governors expected they would get from the federal government. And I think it's fair to say that the federal government sort of dropped the ball on this, on the testing and on not taking it seriously enough and not moving quickly enough, and we lost valuable time. There was an analysis, I think, by USA Today that pointed out that we lost roughly 7 weeks when we could have been battling this had we paid closer attention and not looked and said, oh, this is something happening on the other side of the world, so we don't really have to pay any attention to it. But Pritzker has been very outspoken. He's been on national TV to be critical of the president, although, as I understand it, what he reported was in his most recent telephone call, it was fairly cordial, and the president agreed to make available some of the equipment that Illinois needs.
Well, Brian, when we hear this about, you know, we hear Governor Pritzker, he's getting this national attention, becoming one of the governors that's getting the most attention. And yet some, you know, he has taken, I would say, a pretty proactive stance as far as like, you know, the push for social distancing, the push to shut down the bars and restaurants and schools. He has he's been out in front of that compared to many other states, Florida being one of those that many people are complaining have not taken enough precautions. So, you know, the governor, while it's angered some people that he's been so out in front, at the same time, it may turn out to be a valuable move for the state of Illinois.
Yeah, we hope so. And I think one of the problems, and the people who are angry about him, and particularly when he first issued this order to close bars and restaurants, which came even before the stay-in-place, stay-at-home orders, people just didn't understand the scope and the nature of what we would be dealing with. And I think that's partly owing to the different information environments in which partisans now live. So I think for a long time, if people were primarily watching Fox News, they got a sort of what the president's line had been on this, which is, it's not that big a deal. It'll get better. It'll blow over like the flu does. And, you know, the president in the last couple of weeks has, well, he started by changing his tone and being much more serious about this. Now he's kind of gone back to worrying about the business effects. He has expressed his concerns that, you know, the new line is we don't want the cure, meaning the economic chemotherapy, essentially, that we've been going through, killing our economy in order to stop the spread of this virus. We don't want that to be worse than the actual virus itself. But, you know, and that's a question that policymakers are going to have to weigh, you know, human life versus the economic health of the nation and its people. But Pritzker has, to your point, Sean, before I get too far afield here, Pritzker was one of the leaders that was out front of this. And I think, you know, being that Illinois has such a major metropolitan area in Chicago, there was a good chance that would become a hot spot because disease like this spreads when people are in close contact. And Chicago being one of the biggest cities around, that seemed like a possibility. And as we've seen, Chicago has become one of the national hotspots for this disease. It's seeing its cases grow a lot. And we talk about the Illinois numbers, but everything I've seen shows that, you know, there are still cases downstate. This disease, I don't want to downplay that. The disease is still spreading in Springfield, in Bloomington Normal, in Champaign-Urbana, in Peoria, in Rockford, in Carbondale, in Jackson County, in the Metro East near St. Louis. But the predominant spread and hospitalizations and illnesses. The vast majority of the numbers coming out of Illinois are in Chicago, suburban Cook County, and the collar counties surrounding the city.
That's not all that surprising, because that's where the people live. So you would expect to have more cases out of there. And as of Thursday, there were 37 counties, including some very sparsely populated ones, that had cases. And part of it is that somebody may live in downstate Illinois, but that doesn't mean that they don't have any contact at all with someone from Chicago. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, people being unconscious carriers of the disease and spreading it wherever they go.
Well, that's a good point, Charlie. And Sam, that brings me to the next item here, and that was how the governor not just complaining about the federal government and President Trump, but also about people in the state of Illinois who are not following some of these guidelines, including he specifically mentioned people who had gathered at Chicago's lakefront and the beaches there the other day. Pretty nice weather. He and the mayor of Chicago were pretty upset about that, the mayor deciding to close the beaches. But the governor, I think he used the term, and we had this at the start of the show, saying that those people are spitting in the face of healthcare workers who are putting their lives on the line to treat people.
It's gotten that extreme at this point, because despite the best efforts of the governor, of public health officials, of Cook County officials themselves, to impress upon people just how serious this is and just how virulent this virus really is. And that, as Brian mentioned before, as Charlie mentioned, you know, this virus can be carried in people that don't even show symptoms, and that's the danger. Despite all of that effort, that time, that resource that's been spent on that, people still found it appropriate to gather in large numbers at the lakeshore. Now, look, over these next couple of months, the weather's going to warm up. It's going to become more attractive to be outside, The governor and public health officials have made it very clear, do not go anywhere unless you absolutely have to. And that is what's going to keep everyone safe, as they've stressed. That is what's going to allow us to get through this. We mentioned Governor Cuomo earlier. Governor Cuomo is facing the exact same thing. In the state of New York, I mean, the cases have surpassed 30,000. I mean, they absolutely dwarf the rest of the country in the number of cases. And largely what happened there is that New York didn't take the steps early enough, for one thing. I mean, no one really did. But people are still going out in New York City, which is one of the most densely populated areas in the country. And so, unless people start following that seriously and start taking that to heart, this thing could go on for much, much longer.
Well, we had a record number of people who filed for unemployment this week in the country, and also here in the state of Illinois, a state having to push back its income tax deadline. All of these things creating some financial concerns for the state of Illinois. And Charlie, that's something the state of Illinois always has some financial issues, at least it has for many years. This is really adding some fuel to the fire, though.
Yeah, it's I would say, unprecedented in our lifetime what's going on. This is going to be worse than the recession in the 80s. It's going to be worse than 9/11 and that recession. It's going to be worse than the Great Recession of roughly 10 years ago. But as one indicator, the week ending, this last Monday, we had 114,000 new applications for unemployment insurance. And Greg Hines pointed out in Cranes that represents 2 years of job growth in Illinois. And so the state's finances weren't good to begin with, although we were starting to look a little better. But this is going to really set us back. And the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, which is the fiscal gurus for the General Assembly, did an analysis and a report, a three-year budget report. They're required to do it annually. And in this report, they pointed out that the earlier projection that they made, roughly a month ago, as a matter of fact, we mentioned it on the show a couple weeks ago, that showed modest growth, and they had increased the revenue estimate from the one that was used when this current budget was put together last spring. And that, of course, is now out of whack. And they mentioned how the major sources of revenue for our general funds, the personal income tax, which is roughly half of it, sales tax, which is not quite a quarter, and federal aid, altogether account for 80% of the general funds, which pay for most day-to-day expenses. They pay for stuff like health care, social services, education, that they are likely to take a hit. And they went back and they said, if we have the same impact, the same financial hurt from the recession that occurred in the early 2000s, those taxes, those main taxes, are likely to go down almost 6%, cost us roughly $2 billion in lost revenue. If it's the same as the Great Recession that lasted from 2008 to 2010, when the big three went down almost 17%, we'd lose $4.5 billion. But they also said that any attempt to evaluate the impact of COVID-19 on state revenues is virtually impossible. But they said it was not out of the picture that we could have a recession that could cause those sources to go down 20% for a loss of $8 billion over, spread over several fiscal years. But $8 billion would be roughly 20% of the current general fund budget of approximately $40
billion. And Brian, I think even though we've been hearing a lot about a stimulus package from the federal government that's being voted on as we record this program, still unsure exactly what that's going to do for the state. We know there will be some money coming in. But when you hear something like $8 billion, state's got a lot of backlog of bills still. You know, much of that goes back to the budget impasse that was from a few years ago. This just really puts the state, you know, where it seemed as though we were climbing out of a hole, puts us right back in it.
It does. And, you know, a couple of things there. First, that federal stimulus. There is talk of up to almost $5 billion, $4.9 billion for Illinois in that. Now, that is state and potentially local. The minimum amount the state is supposed to get is $2.7 billion, with another $2.2 billion potentially going to any cities over 500,000 people in Illinois. I know that's Chicago. I'm not sure if some of the larger suburbs fall into that category or not. But there was the head of state government ratings for Fitch said that this may not be very helpful unless there is a massive outbreak and massive state spending related to it, because that money is limited to reimbursement of coronavirus expenditures. And a lot of it might not even be spent unless there is a particular hotspot like New York is now. Hopefully Chicago does not become that, where it needs to have a lot of government spending to backstop this. Now, there are ways, as Charlie can I'm sure expound on, or has in the past anyway, I'll say that, that, you know, you can move money around and count money as going toward one thing, even if it's not a direct expenditure on that. But, you know, Illinois does not have any sort of rainy day fund. A number of us who have are sort of experienced state government reporters sort of chuckled when somebody asked the question of the governor earlier this week. I believe it was, might have been last week. Everything's blur, kind of a blur at this point. But they said, how is the state going to spend the money in its rainy day fund to help, you know, alleviate coronavirus? And the controller, within the last month or so, before all this really started to blow up with COVID-19, said that, you know, there's literally, I think it was 30 seconds or maybe a minute of state operations could be funded with the money in the rainy day fund. Now, there are other funds that can be swept in, and money that can be, you know, that the state has a way of digging in the couch cushions to find a little money here and there. But then the other thing it does is it stiffs for a long time its vendors, the people who provide the toilet paper and food for the prisons and the people who mow the lawns at state facilities. It delays paying them. Now, a lot of those small businesses are going to be hurting already because of the mass shutdown. So that is not going to be good for the state's economy. And how it gets out of this, one imagines that if this continues, if this economic slowdown needs to last not just for the few weeks that the governor started with, but if this goes months and months, that there would have to be some more federal aid to the states in order to keep things going.
Well, let's go to our notes from the field. And Sam, let's start with you.
Well, the people who have been helping those most in need get through this time are volunteers. There are organizations throughout the state that continue to provide services, food, childcare, and the like. And so Governor J.B. Pritzker announced just the other day that he had started the Illinois COVID-19 Response Fund, and he and Penny Pritzker, his sister, had donated some $2 million from the Family Foundation to support it.
All right. Charlie?
Well, one of the things that the federal government has responded to Illinois and other states is that the deadline for getting the real ID, the kind of souped-up driver's license that would allow you to fly domestically, was originally this October 1st, and now it's been pushed back to October 1, 2021. And I guess it's been pushed back because of the impossibility of being able to handle all the folks who might want these things under the current stay-in-place, stay-at-home conditions.
All right. And Brian.
Yeah, there is so much as we are all, or hopefully all of us, are staying in place, staying at home, only going to get our groceries once a week. Many of us are starved for the sort of live entertainment and culture you can often find. And so really Twitter, YouTube have become bounties as a lot of performing arts groups, which are equally hit, and artists, as Sam reported this week, are particularly hard hit because there's been just a complete stoppage for the most part of their opportunities to make money. But there's just been an amazing bounty of opportunities to find culture online. So I commend people, whatever your particular jam is. There are theater companies in Chicago that are putting things online. The Krannert Center in Urbana has put together a list of free performing arts that you can find online. Even the son of Nancy Faust, who was the, and this one's for Charlie, who was the organist for the Chicago White Sox for a long time, put out some herself playing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, so you can get a little flavor of the Major League Baseball season that isn't.
And Charlie had pointed out that the Major League teams, whether you're a Cardinal fan, White Sox, or Cub fan, all of those teams undefeated right now, even though opening day did not occur. We'll point that out. I did want to save just a moment here at the end of the show to also mention Brian Mackey, who has been a regular panelist on this show since 2012, leaving to become host of the public radio program The 21st, which is heard on many of these stations. And Brian, I just wanted to say thank you for all you've done and all your time and effort watching over the State House for Illinois Public Radio and for being on this show.
Well, Sean, thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on this show. I was a listener beforehand, and going on with you and Charlie and Amanda and Daisy and Sam and Jamie and Mary and all the other colleagues we've had over the years has always been the highlight of my week, and I look forward to being a listener once again.
All right. Well, congratulations, Brian, and good luck to you. And we hope to have you back on again, maybe not as a regular panelist, but from time to time as well. That's all of the time we have for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Sam Dunklaw. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.